WICN in Worcester, this is the Venture Forum, tales of entrepreneurship from central Massachusetts. I'm your host, Mark Reed Edwards, Executive Director of the Venture Forum. Now let's start today's tale. This week's guest on the Venture Forum is Kerry Leppo, president of Transcendent Aerospace. And Kerry was also recently a partner at Briggs Capital. Previously, Kerry was founding partner at Homeview and held positions at Kestrel Communications. Kerry is also on the TVF advisory board and served as a judge on our recent five-minute pitch contest, which was a highlight for me. Kerry, it is great to have you on the Venture Forum.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Can you share a bit about your background and career? Gave people a little bit of a taste, but I'd love to learn more and also find out what you're up to these days.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm a native Bostonian. I've been here all my life. I love the area. I love the state. Career-wise, once I got out of college, I had gone through the pre-med program at Boston College, and my junior year realized that that was not really where I wanted to go. So graduating with a BA in biology and chemistry, I went right into the newspaper business. It's a perfect transition.
That makes sense.
Yes, it's perfect. So I spent about 5 years at a local newspaper in my hometown of Revere, the Revere Journal, in journal publishing. And I got a really good inside look to the publishing and advertising business. Yeah. And I was fascinated by that. And after about 5 years at the Journal, I moved on and started my own ad agency when I was about 27.
Wow.
Yeah. And I started with one client that made sausages. And that.
Did you find out how the sausage is made? You know.
Yeah, unfortunately, I did, and actually, it's a lot better than you think.
Yeah.
It's pretty good quality stuff goes in them. But after that, I started building my agency, and I ended up with a piece of Gillette business, and a new iron product called Rowenta came to the United States, and I actually got to launch that product. So I built the agency up to about 15 people, and. It was going pretty well, and I got acquired by a division of Arnold Advertising, Arnold Worldwide.
Yeah.
And I worked at Arnold, basically, for several years, until my mid-40s, when I decided that that was a young person's game, and I didn't like working 70 hours a week. And I was invited to join Briggs Capital, which is a small boutique investment bank, working in the $5 to $50 million area of mergers and acquisitions. And I was sort of the tech geek on the team because I understood a lot of the software, a lot of chemistry, a lot of biological things with medical products. So I got to do a lot of the backgrounds of these companies, preparing them for either sale or acquisition. That's kind of how I have found my way to the aircraft business. In my due diligence, in my travels with Briggs Capital, I ran across an aircraft designer who had designed two aircraft that were, in my opinion anyway, really cutting edge that nobody has ever done before. And I said to myself, well, this really needs to see light of day. And as an engineer, the designer really had a hard time raising money. And I thought this would be an excellent project to jump in on. So about 2.5 years ago, I went full time to Transcendent Aerospace to bring these two aircraft to market.
Yeah,
actually, that is what I do on a daily basis, is work with other governments and our government to bring these two aircraft platforms to the market. They're not general aviation. They are military spec aircraft.
Uh-huh.
So we have some really unusual technologies in our aircraft that allow us to do some jobs that no previous aircraft have been able to do. So that's my entire career path.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. A transition from sausages to aerospace.
Correct. It's a perfect transition.
So what makes this area special for you? I understand you were born in Revere, you've stayed in Massachusetts. What's behind that? I mean, and you're in aerospace. You could be anywhere running an aerospace company, right?
Oh, that's exactly right. You can be anywhere, and that's why I'm still here, because we build planes in Colorado.
Yeah.
So, you know, that we're in Colorado Springs out near the Air Force Academy. The area is special just because it's one of the few places in the country you can be at the beach and in 2 hours be skiing.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, it's got such a diverse environment that you can do all of your summer and winter sports right in the same place without ever leaving. You've got a great weather pattern from anywhere from now March all the way through October. This is one of the nicest places in the country to live in. I also stayed here for college. I had a number of scholarship offers all over the country, and it came down to New Jersey at Princeton and Boston College. And I stayed here because my mom convinced me that my laundry was important and eating with grandma on Sundays is important still. And she said, if you stay here in Boston, you can come home on the weekend. And that made sense at 17 years old. So I did that over Princeton, which I don't have any regrets about it. But that's one of the things that makes it special here, is that there are so many great colleges and universities here in this area and in Central Mass that people come from all over the country and end up staying here. Yeah. And I think that gives us a really diverse workforce for sure, and different cultures and stuff. So, my story is one of just really liking the environment and have always found something fun to do. There was no reason to go anywhere else.
So without giving me G4 security clearance, what can you tell me about Transcendent Aerospace's focus? And you got two planes you're working on. Is there anything you can share in that?
Yeah, there's a lot we can share. I mean, the story of the aircraft is pretty interesting, because they were originally designed to be simple general aviation aircraft. The designer is a pilot, and he's a former Lockheed Martin Skunk Works guy, just very, very significant aircraft designer. And he just couldn't understand why there was no such thing as an entry-level jet for the general aviation pilot. And he set out to design a twin-engine jet that was four-place. They're called VLJs, very light jets. And he designed one called the Maverick, and it essentially flew beautifully right off the drawing board. These are designed with slide rules, not computer modeling, very old school, very World War II kind of production and manufacturing. It's very simple. And he developed the most simple jet that a general aviation pilot could not only train in as little as 100 hours, but a zero-time pilot could fly these in about 150 hours and be insurable by the insurance companies, who really end up deciding on who flies and how they fly, because insurance is one of the most important parts of aviation. He developed the twin and then said, well, heck, I can probably do a single and make it even easier. And he designed what's called an SJ-1, which is a single engine version of the similar aircraft. He designed them in a time where a lot of people were trying to come to market with these simple aircraft, and the market was flooded with VLJs, and most of them failed because they just didn't fly correctly, and people spent billions on them and never ended up getting aircraft, and Bob built two planes that did fly. But the market dried up for funding for these aircraft because of so many failures. So I came along about 10 years ago. I got involved in this project, and it's a 10-year overnight success is what we have here. I got involved in it. I said, well, let's skip general aviation. I can't help you raise money there, but I can help you raise money for military versions of this. So why don't we sit back and see where there are holes in the market for the military as far as training or close support or all kinds of different communications platforms. So what we did over the past 8 years is really refine two versions of multiple mission, multiple platform aircraft designed for the United States and for third world countries because of their affordability and capacity and their ability to be stealthy and a lot of other things that are desirable in an airframe that's actually affordable and easy to maintain and easy to train people to fly in. So our focus is truly military aircraft and communications platforms and light weapon platforms. It does an awful lot. They can be containerized. We don't fly them to the post. We literally put them in containers and ship them. So they are...
They're relatively small then, right?
And they're not that small.
Do the wings fold? Or how do you...
They come off. Yeah, okay. The wings detach. And in the single, it just slides into that. And in the twin, the engines actually fold up.
Interesting.
And it's really interesting. And we can ship them that way. And it just saves a lot of wear and tear on the aircraft. If they're distributed around the world, they can just be delivered to post, yeah, as opposed to flown to post. And it's a really interesting way to deliver an aircraft. Yeah. So that's truly our focus. I spend my time with many foreign governments discussing, you know, use of the aircraft for training and for other purposes, as well as our U.S. military and Canadian militaries. Yeah. So that's what I spend the bulk of my time doing, is customer interaction.
Yeah.
And bringing the mission specs to our designers and then working with them to achieve it. So that's pretty much what I do all day.
It's interesting, the early focus on general aviation. It seems like every couple of years, there's articles about how everyone's going to have an airplane, that it's going to be really easy to fly and, you know, automated and all that, but it doesn't ever seem to really happen.
They don't want it to happen. You don't want people flying. I mean, you don't want the average person flying. It's an extremely complex thing to do. Unfortunately, if you have an incident in an aircraft, you can't pull over and get out and look at the damage. I mean, it's catastrophic to have any of that happen. Yeah. So I think flying cars, all of these things have failed. The FAA really can't even imagine having flying cars or automated flying anything. There's not going to be anything autonomous flying in my lifetime that I can see. Yeah. I can't imagine the FAA would allow it. They can't figure out how to let drones fly in airspace now, you know? And those are just little devices. You have to be licensed to fly a drone, and not everybody passes that. Yeah. So can you imagine a car that has the capability of flying?
Yeah.
Yikes.
I mean, I love planes, but I would never consider becoming a pilot because it just seems too complicated, you know, especially, you know, at the age I am, you know, I think you have to be young when you take that on, but maybe that's me.
It's better if you are. I mean, your reaction times do get slower. Your processing, you know, mental processing speed diminishes a little bit, but there's a lot of pilots in their 70s and 80s who are extremely competent.
Yeah.
You know, but they're also not flying high performance aircraft.
Exactly.
They're flying Cessna 172s and things that are very stable, solid airplanes that don't go all that fast. So, you know, when you get into something like ours, it'll go 500 miles an hour. You got to think a little differently.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about Briggs Capital, that transition from the advertising world to the world of capital. How did that transition go, and what was your focus at Briggs?
Well, you know, it's a much more natural transition than you would expect. If you're at the strategic level of advertising, which is really where my focus was, it was client branding and strategy on their marketing plans, you're dissecting companies all the time. You know, be it Gillette or being it, you know, a Braun or any major consumer company, there's an awful lot of strategy involved. So when you go to sell a company, there's actually strategy involved in that. So because I had been dissecting companies for so long and their marketing and branding strategies, going to the private equity market or the M&A market was a lot more natural a transition than you would think, because you get in there and you get a client company, and the first thing you do is you look at their balance sheets and their assets, and then you start looking at these off-balance sheet assets, as we would call them, which is their brand equity, it's their manufacturing processes, it's a number of different things that you look at to value a company. So the advertising background of taking companies apart and what their position is in the market and their competition and who makes sense to be strategically aligned with is really a natural transition to the funding part of the market. And my focus really was the technologies or the manufacturing processes of our client companies and how we could either go out and attract another company of similar, you know, or a competitor to acquire, or it helps you in preparing a company for sale as to how you package them, you know, when you build the sales deck and the pitch. Right. So it's, you know, my focus was really the client interaction and the analysis of the company and their brand and all of the components that allowed us to go and roll up companies or sell companies. So not as big a transition as one would think.
So you said the secret word. You said pitch a moment ago, and you were
pitch.
A judge at our 5-minute pitch contest, which we wrapped up on March 9th. I know you're really charged up about it, and you and I actually spoke after the contest, and you were just hyped up about it because it was so much fun. What got you charged up about it?
Seeing folks really put their butt out there on the line, you know, for something they believe in. I think the thing that gets you excited about that, and I believe me, I've seen a lot of pitches and I've made a lot of pitches over, you know, 40 years. I make them every week still myself. I think it's really fun because you have to get these folks focused on their missions. A lot of people have so many great ideas, but it's like herding cats. There are so many good ideas. They're not sure what they're selling sometimes. And it's fun to start to see people get it into focus and get it into a pitch or a cohesive presentation of what they're doing. And the passion of people who do this is very infectious and contagious. And, you know, we had a pretty good group of folks in this last pitch contest. And I've spoken to three of them afterwards. They've all given me a call. And I got to talk to them as to why they landed where they landed and some insight into it. So, you know, these contests are energizing no matter what. Not to mention being able to see a really fine idea that may be worthy of hooking them up with people that can fund it. So it's a great, great process. I'd love to do them in person. You know,
We will.
I know. We have to. So that's why I get excited about it. It's people's passion.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you said at the beginning of our chat about this is people just putting themselves out there. That's what, you know, that's what distinguishes the person sitting at a card table saying, hey, we should open up a bar, and they never do it, from the person who actually goes and does it. Right.
Well, you know, I've been involved in 7 startups of my own doing, and they all came from cocktail napkins, essentially.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know how else to explain it, but the ability to act on it. Well, you have to have a lot of things, though, going. You do have to have the latitude of some kind of holding staying power or family and friends financing or something to get you at least proof of concept started. But It's a gutsy thing to do, to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can tell when somebody really believes in what they're doing, and you can tell when they're in it for the dough. And if you're in it for the money, you're in it for the wrong reason. The money comes, it takes care of itself. It's all of the bootstrapping and hard work that it takes to get that proof of concept or get somebody to notice it that is the real work. So it's that's why you get involved with groups like the TVF, because you see young people with great minds, or older people. I mean, guys who've been in business for 20 years certainly jump out into the marketplace and think they can do it themselves, and a lot of times they can. And that's why you get involved with things like this, because you see ideas at their inception. And, you know, if you've seen as many ideas as I have, you kind of be able to pick them out pretty quickly as to who's good and who isn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what gets me involved in things like the TVF.
Great. We'll be right back with Carrie Lepo, so stay tuned. Carrie, I want to dig a bit into the reason you're involved with the Venture Forum. We talked about the 5-minute pitch contest, but you know, you've been involved for a while, and I'm just wondering what kind of sparked that involvement.
Well, I mean, Ron Frazier was the chairman for a long time, and Ron and I have a relationship, and we were just chatting about it, and I said, you know, there's nothing better than seeing pitches. There's nothing better seeing what resources are in Central Mass. It's an overlooked area for whatever reason. It seems like there's a no man's land between Springfield and Boston, and it happens to be the Worcester area, or the, you know, Central Mass, that people, it's like flyover country.
Yeah.
And there's an awful lot of resources in financial, in technology, and a myriad of verticals that I think are overlooked. And it's such a great area to work with, and the people are nice. Yeah, I mean, I'm in Foxborough, but I'm much more enticed to go to Worcester than I am to go to Boston.
Yeah.
For me, it's an easier, nicer ride, and the restaurants are great and that kind of thing, and it's a great place to meet people and hear ideas. There's a lot of good educational institutions out that way. You've got great biotech. You've got UMass Medical. I mean, there's just a lot going on here that people are uneducated about, you know, and since a lot of the folks I run across are Boston-based, you know, I say to them, have you ever considered, like, going to look in, like, central Massachusetts,
right,
or somewhere other than Boston or Cambridge to look for your funding or your resources, you know? So
yeah,
it's really kind of an educational thing.
And one of the things that you said to me after the 5-minute pitch contest is, like, I love being a judge, but I'd love to be a mentor too. Is there a part of you that's like, well, you know, I had help early in my career and I want to help people who are starting up things? Is that what drives that?
I had one great mentor. My first job back at the Revere Journal, I had a gentleman there that was willing to teach me all there was to know about that business.
Yeah.
So that mattered. I mean, without him, I would know half of what I know now, or I would have had to find it out the hard way.
Yeah.
I do mentor at Babson's Olin College. I mentor first and second year MBA students, and I look at their business pitches and stuff. And it's fascinating. The minds, I can tell you at 27, where a lot of these folks are, I wasn't thinking the way they're thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, they're thinking of taking over small countries. You know, I was like, how do I pay for my car? You know, it was very different.
I've got to pay rent. Oh, geez.
Exactly. It's like, you know, geez. I mean, I bought my first house when I was pretty young, about 23. So I had, like, lawns to mow. I was
right,
not thinking of starting companies, you know, really at that young age. But I am amazed at how sophisticated some of these young folks are and how far along they are in developing businesses and ideas. So, you know, the mentoring thing is great. And you can save people some real heartache just by a few things that you've, you know, fallen on the sword a few times for and sharing it. So it's, I think we owe it to, I don't know, owe it to society certainly a little bit to give back. I mean, if we've done well, and, you know, why wouldn't you share? I don't understand why people hold on to all these secrets sometimes,
yeah,
when it's a lot more fun to see it shared and then have that blossom into something really good.
Yeah, I know, talking to all the entrepreneurs who are in the 5-minute pitch contest about the experience of being mentored was really enlightening. And each one of them, including the ones who didn't, you know, place in the top three, told me that it really helped them either focus or just get rid of some, you know, some things that they, some preconceived notions that they had, that when their mentor was speaking with them, it kind of crystallized their ideas. And it's, I think, a very helpful process for an entrepreneur.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. It is truly, you can't see the forest for the trees when you're in it.
Yeah.
And you really, really need to bounce some of what you're doing, you know, off another pair of eyes that may have some more experience. I'll tell you, the other thing is that if you're not scared every day when you get up, when you're doing what you're doing and you're passionate behind, you're not reaching high enough.
Yeah.
I mean, to this day, in my advanced years, I get up every morning and say, what am I doing with this whole,
yeah,
airplane thing? So, you know, if you're not a little bit scared, a little,
sure,
bit sweaty, you're not pushing hard enough. I mean, that's advice I give to all of these young entrepreneurs, and no matter what they're trying to do, you got to be a little bit edgy and just a little bit scared, and then you know you're pushing the envelope and you're probably doing the right thing.
So what do you think it will take to boost capital in central Massachusetts?
Knowledge that exists. I think that, you know, I don't know whether it's going to require a PR campaign on, you know, a targeted PR campaign to the PE community, the venture community, or whoever the powers are that, you know, are in Boston or, you know, the far end of the other end of the state, just to understand that there are resources where you are, and this venture forum can be very valuable. There's a lot of smart ideas out here. And I think that's what it's going to take is education. And that's, you know, it gets expensive, but it's also networking. I guess the TVF certainly needs to participate in larger venture forums, because there are other forums out there. And it's just getting known. It's like any other business that you're launching. You have to network. So we as members of that need to network about it. I certainly talk to it about my Babson kids. I say, hey, you know, don't always go to Boston for the answers. Sometimes they're in weird places like Worcester. You know, I mean, it's not on the tip of anybody's tongue, but it could be a much more receptive crowd. You know, that's the other thing. I think there's a lot of preconceived notions with the bigger areas for funding that, you know, we need certain kinds of profile companies. I think there's a lot more receptive folks out in the middle part of the state that would be looking to bring talent out there. So I think that it's just a matter of education and networking for us.
And that leads me to my final question about the future, near and long term, of entrepreneurship in Central Massachusetts. What will it take to take someone at Babson or BC or BU or Harvard, you know, or Northeastern, or, you know, one of those colleges there, who has an idea, to think, well, instead of going to the Innovation District in Boston, I want to start my company out in Worcester?
We have to go recruit them. We had a little company called the Third Door. Was it Third Door?
Yep.
Third Room. Yeah. We need to take that approach with the Venture Forum. We have to go recruit.
Yeah.
I think that's why I talk about the other forum groups, you know, that we have to go to. We have to go to the places like the Angel List, or people that are, you know, funding small seed startups, and make them aware of our existence and what our resources are. So, you know, it might take some recruiting at the bigger colleges, you know, and doing a guest pop-up kind of speech or kind of thing. I think we have to go out to them. They're not going to look for us. We do have to go to them. Like, if we could do a something at the Olin School, and I'm sure we could, and just let them know what's available. Yeah. People don't know. So, and they, you know, they just don't do the research on funding the way they should. They do all the traditional things.
Well, Carrie, this has been a great discussion. I don't think I've discussed aerospace and sausage in the same interview, and this was a fascinating, wide-ranging discussion.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. I'm Mark Reed Edwards. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Venture Forum from WICN in Worcester. Join us next week as we continue to share tales of entrepreneurship from Central Massachusetts.